We return to the book of Ecclesiastes tonight as we consider Solomon's theme of living a meaningful life. We close in even more so on the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. We're in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 tonight. Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon has shown us that there isn't anything in this life by itself that can offer us meaning and satisfaction. The key word, especially in the first six chapters of Ecclesiastes, is that Hebrew word hevel, which you have translated as vanity or meaningless. It's this idea of there's something there that you think you can hold on to and it's gone. And there's no meaning found in just those things by themselves. And so then in the second half of the book, Solomon has turned now to instructing the class, right? Because he is Koheleth, the teacher or the preacher. He has instructed us on where we should look for meaning or how we should live our lives in that way. He's given some principles to some things that we should embrace and some things we should avoid. Last week we looked at the way of folly and Solomon's warning against that. And so tonight we turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and really you can kind of think as Ecclesiastes 11 and 12, it's kind of a funnel to kind of bring everything back together and shows us, okay, now here's everything we've talked about. How do you live in this world where nothing's going to bring you meaning in and of itself? And in fact, sometimes we read Ecclesiastes and we go, man, this guy, where is he going with this? And I told you at the beginning, you have to think about the end. Fear God, keep his commandments. These are the goads and the nails that keep us focused on what is right to find meaning in this life. And so in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, as Solomon applies these truths, he talks about all throughout this chapter how we can have diligent joy in an unsure world. And I use that term, unsure world, because that is exactly what we live in. We live in an unsure world. This is something we've just accepted in our lives, and therefore we live in light of that truth. It informs our decisions to some extent or another. I mean, let's think about it. Because we live in an unsure world, you buy home insurance, right? Or life insurance. Or you debate whether or not you need the extended warranty on that product because we live in an unsure world. We recognize that if we use something, it's going to wear out. And so we have to balance our enjoyment of whatever that is with the reality that nothing lasts forever. Things are not sure and secure because that's the nature of the world we live in. And though we live in such a world, we don't always know how to approach it. Because the world is so unsure, there are some who therefore never do anything, right? I mean, they're always afraid of the unknown, and they seem to always spin their wheels in the never-ending cycle of, you know, give me a little more time and I'll be ready to, and you just kind of fill in the blank. On the flip side, there are people who go the other way, right? Because the world's unsure, I'm just going to get all I can, right? And enjoy this life. And they never say no to anything, right? No pleasure, no enjoyment. It's just go, 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 whatever my heart desires. And here is Solomon now in the classroom of life. He brings us, here's the application. In chapter 11, he teaches us how to have joy in an unsure world. He admonishes us not to live paralyzed by the uncertainties of life, while at the same time balancing our enjoyment of this life with the eternal perspective of our God. This is diligent joy in an unsure world. And what does he tell us here? He tells us that meaningful life is found in engaging in and enjoying the temporal work and life God has given us here. And I want to be very clear when I make this statement that encapsulates this whole chapter. What you're driving towards and the focus of what we're looking at is the life that who has given us? God has given us. Okay, this is not an admonition for you to go out and live your best life now. Okay? You have to keep in perspective that the life we're called to engage in and the life we're called to enjoy is the life that God has given us. And so you have to live in application of the passages that Solomon has spoken in all up until now. that we live under the sovereign hand of God, that we use our vapor wisely, that we don't look for meaning in the things of this life by themselves. But just because the things of this life don't offer you meaning in and of themselves, and just because you only have so much time, doesn't mean you can't live and rejoice in the life that God has given you as long as you keep it in the proper perspective. And so that's the balance that we seek tonight as we go through the passage. And I have this chapter divided up into two major sections. In the first section, in verses 1 through 6, we will see the diligent work that Solomon calls people to who are followers of the Lord. And specifically, in verses 1 through 4, Solomon says that uncertainty in life requires us to be diligent. Look at verses 1 through 4 of Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Cast your bread upon the waters, and you will find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what disaster may happen on earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. So Solomon says, uncertainty in life requires us to be diligent. Now, it has been well demonstrated in this book that we cannot find meaning in this life alone. Solomon has made this a very solid case that whenever you try to just find meaning in life, it's hevel, it's empty, it's not going to give you the return that it promises. But he's also made a solid case that we cannot always predict the future. We do not know what event lies in wait for us around the corner. And you know that, right? You've lived that. We can make our best guesses and estimates, but we cannot predict the future with any certainty. So therefore, we must live under the sovereign hand of our good God, trusting him. Man's wisdom cannot explain everything, and that is clearly demonstrated, both in this book and in our lives. But just as clear has been Solomon's case that man's folly is never worth living in either. He just spent a whole chapter in chapter 10 saying, look, it doesn't do us any good to live in the foolishness either, even though we don't understand everything. So now, over these last two chapters, he says, okay, how do we live? Well, when we take in the realities of this vaporous life and we combine them with the limited knowledge of what we have, we are left with that question. How are we to live? Should we just pack it all in and not do anything? Because that's the reaction of some people. Some would see this lack of knowledge that we have about the future and say, well, I mean, it doesn't really do us any good to live the things of this life and engage in them because we just really don't know what's going to happen. Instead, you know, we'd rather live for the moment, you know, and the things that we enjoy. Or they'd rather live in fear, wondering if they've done enough. And so Solomon addresses both of these in this passage. He makes the case that we must work diligently in an unsure world. We cannot let fear of the future and the unknown paralyze our lives as we trust in the Lord. You know, just because we trust in the Lord doesn't mean we know everything's going to happen to us over the next X amount of months or days or years, but it doesn't mean we can't go on living in the joy of the Lord. And so Solomon says, this chapter is very practical. And again, I want you to understand where Solomon is coming from here. The things that Solomon gives here, this is not like, you know, there's some very practical things here, but this is not just, well, okay, I want to know how to invest my stock, so I read Ecclesiastes chapter 11. He's using these pictures to illustrate deeper and greater truths of how we live our lives. First off, as we said, we are required to live diligently. He tells the reader in verse 1 of chapter 11, cast your bread upon the waters. Now that's a very interesting phrase. We really don't seem to have a parallel for this in our modern world. In fact, you read the commentators, there's some debate over what exactly this phrase means. It really seems possible that the best explanation is this, that Solomon is encouraging this idea of this picture of engaging in maritime trade. So cast your bread upon the waters. Somebody's reading their study Bible back there, okay? Cast your bread upon the waters means taking foodstuffs through the shipping lanes to do business with others, is probably what this phrase means. And such an endeavor, right, if you're going to put things on a ship and you're going to take them and you're going to trade them, that engagement is fraught with many dangers and circumstances, right? Storms may arise and threaten the cargo, right? Your wait's going to become prolonged. These other unforeseen circumstances may cause hardship and trouble, and it's going to take time for those ships to return with goods. Solomon had a fleet that would go out and secure treasures for the kingdom. And we read in 1 Kings chapter 10 and verse 22 that it only came back every 3 years. For the king had a fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. So what is Solomon saying in this verse? He's saying, you know, you're going to find no return on investment if you don't engage in such commerce and trade. And instead, if you diligently invest in these ventures, you will find that return, but it's going to take time. Don't let the fear of life and the fear of the unknown paralyze you from engaging diligently in the work that God has given you to do. It takes diligence to stay the course, and quite literally, you're talking about something about ships, weather the storm, right? And be patient. These investments don't come up overnight. And such a calculated risk can yield good returns. And Solomon continues that picture in verse 2. He says, give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what disaster may happen on the earth. Solomon admonishes the reader to make prudent, diversified investments. He says, give your portion to 7 or even 8. And again, it's not like there's a particular number here. Solomon is saying, you know, to think broadly in the scheme of things. It's impossible to know what disasters may fall upon the earth. It's not scripture, but maybe you read verse 2 and you think of that old saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, that's kind of the principle that Solomon is teaching here, right? A diligent investor diversifies his portfolio. He takes stock of the uncertain world we live in, and he makes a wise choice based on these facts. So what is Solomon saying here? Again, is this just like the little business section in Solomon's, you know, works, and somebody read that and go, oh, that's good business advice? No, okay, it's more than that. You cannot let the uncertainty of life keep you from going about the business God has called you to diligently engage in. We can't go, well, you know, it's all out of my control anyway, so I'll just sit at home and eat bonbons and watch soap operas and life will be good, right? I don't really know what that means. My pastor used to say that growing up, and so I say it. That's dangerous, right? But we can't just sit around. You have to diligently engage in the work that God has given you to do. And instead of being paralyzed, be wise in the things that God has given you to do. And when you do that, when you use the wisdom of God to go about business the right way, you know, God says, you know, this is how you conduct your life, and we give it to him, right? I mean, we're given to thoughts in our lives to portfolios and retirement plans and savings accounts and investments. And when those things pay off, we want to look at that and go, yeah, you know, I'm pretty smart that way, you know. We want to do things our way in an effort to guarantee ourselves some sort of return. And in reality, Solomon is calling us to understand something. You need to be diligent, but realize you're not in control. We're responsible to make wise choices, but then you got to leave that in God's hands and let him do the work. Solomon admonishes us not to live in fear, but to diligently engage in investment as we go about our lives. But we're not to put our faith in those things. It is God who is in control, and any benefit we gain is a blessing from his hand. And if it all tanks tomorrow, well, we're not in control anyway. God's in control, and he's sovereign. We're just going about diligently doing the work that God called us to do. The last thing the uncertainty of the world should do is discourage us from being diligent. I read you verses 1 through 4. We're actually going to lump verses 4 through 6 together. So verses 1 and 2 really teach us uncertainty requires diligence. Verses 4 through 6 teach us that God's sovereignty demands diligence. We'll pick up in verse 3. For if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. You see, some would argue that the sovereignty of God, and he is sovereign, right? He is over all things. Some would argue that precludes then our diligence in life. The thinking is this: well, God's in control, I'll just go do what I want. But nothing could be further from the truth. The sovereignty of God demands that we act diligently, that we engage in the things he's called us to do. And so Solomon now switches pictures from the trade and the investment side of, okay, you know, it's unsure, but you need to go out and do this, right, and be diligent. And now he switches picture to the inevitability of things that will happen and how that motivates us. He uses in verse 3 the picture of, well, the clouds are full of rain. If we observe clouds full of rain, we are sure that eventually, right, it's going to rain. Maybe not here, but it's going to rain somewhere, right? But God is in control of that. The farmer may wish to control such rain for his crops, but he cannot. He says, if a tree falls in the forest, right, of natural causes, that's where it goes. It goes to the place that God directed it. It doesn't get up on little tree legs and walk away, right? Because that is not in the tree's control. In the same way, we are not in control, and we must follow God in dependent obedience. The future is beyond our control. Just like we cannot direct the tree or the rain, we cannot direct the days ahead in our lives. But that shouldn't paralyze us. That shouldn't make us lazy and complacent. He says here in verse 4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. If the farmer waits for just the right time to sow or reap, he's never going to do it. There will always be something that isn't quite right. Perhaps you've read Pastor Warren Wiersbe's commentaries. He said this: if you're looking for an excuse to do nothing, you can find one. I mean, we're pretty good at that, right? Instead, what must the farmer do? He must use his best judgment and wisdom given to him by the Lord and trust God with the outcome. Okay, we're going to make the best decision we can. God demands us to be diligent, and we're going to do it. And God, we're just going to trust you, whatever you deem best. Because it is impossible for us to know everything. It is impossible for us to have the infinite knowledge that God has of all the outcomes that could happen and will happen. Solomon says, there's so much in this world that we don't even understand. He uses in verse 5 the picture of the miracle of life. God uses man and woman to create a human child. However, we do not know how God does this incredible work of wedding the material and immaterial part of a human being at conception. That's God's doing, and it is a precious and a wonderful thing. And there is some disagreement. Perhaps you have a different translation in front of you tonight, because the word in verse 5 that the English Standard Version translates as spirit, you don't know where the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, that word can be used for both wind and the human spirit. Solomon may have been using the wind and the growing of a child in the womb as a picture, both as separate pictures for not knowing where the wind comes or for how God knits a child together, or it may be with what I shared with you a minute ago, the wedding of the material and the immaterial. Either way, the message is the same. There are some things in life that are just too difficult for you and I to understand. Right? Not because we're eternally stupid, okay? Debatable for, you know, people like me, I guess. But because we are so finite, we cannot understand the works of our infinite God. We are so limited, and we manifest our human ignorance. We don't know the work of God in this world. He made everything. He controls everything. So let us respond to him in obedience. Let us be diligent and follow him. Our faith in him allows us to live for him even through the things that we don't understand in our lives. He is owed our best effort and our best service. And when we go about our daily lives and the strength that he gives us, giving all that we have wherever we are, we glorify him. So what does Solomon say in verse 6? He says to that reluctant farmer, he says, go out and sow your seed in the morning and don't withhold your hand in the evening. What is that verse saying? He's saying, give the work that God has given you, everything you have all day long. Go out and do what God's given you the ability to do. You really thought that work was a part of the curse, didn't you? But God created man to work. Now, it's a lot harder because of sin. But our created purpose is to work, so we give it everything we have. We don't know which things are going to prosper and pan out, he says there in verse 6, or if they're all going to come up good, or all of them are going to come up bad. But God knows. One thing we know for sure, we cannot enjoy the blessings of life if we don't do the work God has called us to do. If we don't exercise diligence, we cannot enjoy the fruit that God gives. Now, I want to caution us here. I don't want to go off in the ditch on the other side now, because I want to remind you something that Solomon has already shared with us earlier in the book of Ecclesiastes. You need to do the work that God's given you, giving everything you have to that work. But don't expect that work to give you the satisfaction you're seeking in life. You cannot be a workaholic and expect that you're going to find in that work some kind of satisfaction that only God gives to your life. You have to balance these things. You work hard, you give God everything he's asked of you, but you rest and you trust in him and you look to him for that satisfaction. Just as there's no satisfaction in laziness, there's no satisfaction in, well, my life is just about the job. There is no joy in uncertain fear. We must respond to God's sovereignty instead with diligent work. And if we do so, we can enjoy the blessings of living this life that God has given us. And that's what he spends the second part of this chapter on, talking about joyful living. And in verses 7 and 8, Solomon tells us quite clearly and quite practically, we need to enjoy and rejoice in the years God gives you. Light is sweet, he says, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. So Solomon reminds us here that the little time that we have on earth is a gift that God has given us to enjoy in him. And he uses here the picture of light and darkness. And just so you understand the picture here, we all are on the same page. Light in this picture is life, and darkness is death, okay, and what lies beyond. Like the light of the sun, living here in the world that God has given us is a wonderful gift. And don't we who live in Michigan resonate with this picture the last few weeks, right? I don't know about you, but there's always a week or so in January or February, we haven't seen the sun for a long time, and I start to struggle a little bit, right? By the way, I'm very thankful in moments like that that we have godly friends. You know, they put their arm around you and they pray with you and encourage you, right? But this past week, we've enjoyed some wonderful, beautiful, I mean, like today, it's just a perfect day outside. We go outside, we see the sun, it's warm. You know, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, right? It's like Goldilocks in 3 days, right? It's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just right, okay? Except there's no bears waiting to eat us up, right? I shouldn't say that because the bear is a snowstorm coming in May, okay? These days are sweet and enjoyable. They're pleasant and agreeable to our senses. So therefore, what is the picture here? Let us enjoy the life that God has given us under the sun. And you know what? It may be easy and it may be at least tempting, right, to look at the things that Solomon says throughout Ecclesiastes and conclude, well, life just isn't really worth living. And indeed, some have come away from Ecclesiastes with that, like, well, why are we doing all this? It's just the rat race. Let's just get it over with. And indeed, it isn't worth living if all we do is live for ourselves and try to seek meaning in these vain, repetitious things under the sun. But if we are living in the light of God's sovereignty and with our perspective turned towards Him, we can do what Solomon says here, and we can live in joy. Solomon admonishes us to rejoice in all the years God gives us. You know, if you're looking for a reason to complain, you can find a reason to complain at any age you're at. When we're kids, we just want to get old enough and do more things. We got some kids in here. You ever thought that, kids? Right? You just want to be a little bit older so you can... I was just talking to one of our young men over there tonight. He just can't wait to drive, you know? And I get that. I mean, you're like, I just want to get there, right? You know, when we're teens, I want to drive. I want to move out. I want to do this. I want to do that, right? When we're young adults, I want a better paying job. I'm looking for a spouse. I want to have a defined role that I fill in this life. When we're young married, we want to have kids. We want to buy our own place. We want to get further down the road of life. When we're young parents, we want our kids to grow up and quit making so many messes and stop waking us up in the middle of the night, right? I lived there, okay? When we're middle-aged, we want things to go back a few years because it's starting to get away from us. And when we're in our latter years, we just wish we had half the energy we used to have, some of the freedoms we no longer enjoy, and we wish we just didn't hurt all the time, right? I mean, these are the realities that we live in the life under the sun. And if you really want a reason to complain, you can find one. You can find something you don't like about your life. It's not hard. We live in a fallen, sinful world, and life isn't perfect. And if you want to spend your life wishing these things away, you're not rejoicing in the life that God has given you. And what does Solomon say at the end of verse 8? Solomon reminds you that the sunny days are passing you by. Life is, he uses that word again, hevel. All that comes is hevel, is vanity. It's something you can't grasp on there. It's disappearing before your eyes. It's sliding through your grip. So what does he say at the end of the beginning of verse 8? Knowing that's where he's going, he says, if you live in many years, rejoice in them all, because the darkness is coming and the night is long. Here's the thing. The reality is this, folks. It's not that life is so short. It's that eternity is so long. Right? Yes, life is short, but the greater reality is when you die and you go to eternity, I mean, that's forever. Death will one day come for us all. And the reality of death can do two things. The reality of death can either make this life meaningless, right? Well, we're just going to die, so whatever. Or it can make life meaningful. We're going to die, so we need to make the most of what God has given us here. You only have one opportunity to live this life. And how you live it and what you believe has great bearing on where you're going to spend the eternity after you're gone. And so Solomon's admonition here, I would argue that what Solomon is saying in this chapter is not for unbelievers. Why do you say that? Because Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, fear God and keep his commandments. If that's the perspective we have, if you're going to fear God and keep his commandments, you have to be a believer. You have to know God. You have to have a relationship with him. And only then can you rejoice in everything you face in life. These are the goads and the nails that drive us back to living this way, and there's sure things we can count on. That death one day comes for us all, so let us live in the present and enjoy the present in God. Control, and so let us rejoice in the life he has given us. And if you're living in disobedience to God, that's going to be hard. The life of a fool is a life of sin. And the life of the disobedient is a difficult life. God judges sin. And those who engage in sin will not succeed. And if you are in sin, and if you're living in that sin, you're going to struggle in life. And I'm not just talking about, I hope you understand here, I'm not talking about some prosperity gospel thing, right? That if you live one way, you're just going to have all your needs met, and you're never going to have bad things happen. You're going to have health, wealth, and this condo on the beach. It's going to be fantastic, okay? What are we talking about? We're talking about the intangible here. We're talking about the joy that God gives us in this life. And if we live in sin, we can't enjoy a relationship with God the way it's supposed to be lived. But as we live in the way that God has called us to live, trusting in Him and following Him, we can enjoy this life that He has given to us. Because there is no joy in sin, but only in the presence of God. Psalm chapter 16, verse 11, "You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore." This joy is available to us throughout all our days as we walk with the Lord. This is not a promise that everything in this life will be easy, because it certainly will not be so in a fallen world. The way ahead is sometimes dark and unpredictable and even painful at times. But the promise is this: whatever we face, we can face it with the joy of knowing God and living in Him, resting in His control. What did I tell you this morning? Joy isn't based on feeling, it's based on reality, right? It's based on the truth that God is in control. And so in whatever I face, I can rest in Him and live with Him. And therefore, whatever season of life we find ourselves in, we can rejoice. And that's what Solomon says as we wrap up the chapter tonight. He says, rejoice in your season of life. Verses 9 and 10, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity." Age adds perspective to our lives. Maturity colors the way we see the world, but it also brings with it its own brand of hardship, doesn't it? Solomon admonishes us to live then with joy in the seasons of our lives. And specifically here, he's speaking to those who are young. Okay, so how many of you in here tonight, you raise your hand, you identify yourself as young? You know, I'm young. You say, I'm young, okay? I know some of you are like, I'm totally as young as you feel, right? So, okay? So, you know, it's perspective, right? When I stand in the youth group, I'm old. When I'm in here, you know, maybe I'm not so old, right? So in reality, I mean, there's this application to us all, but I would specifically, like Solomon point out, he's looking at those who are younger, who have a little bit more ahead of them in life, and saying, listen, you need to know this. You need to listen to this. So I'd admonish you, if you're here tonight and you're young, listen not to what I say, but what Solomon says. This is one who conceivably has what we would call his entire life before him. And what is he saying? He's saying, don't waste your life away in frivolous pursuits. Don't let it slip through your hands because you're worried about everything. Walk through this life with joy. Specifically, enjoy the pleasures of life that God has given. God has created a beautiful world for us not only to see, but for us to enjoy. God has implanted within our hearts desires and longings that we can fulfill in the way that He tells us to do it. We are to enjoy the things that God has given us. That's the first part of verse 9, right? Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. I mean, he is saying, go out there and live the life that God has given you. But don't just do it all willy-nilly, right? What does he say? You have to understand the context, right? He says at the end of verse 8, but know that for all of these things, God will bring you into judgment. What is he saying? He says, listen, there's a perspective here. There's an accountability. God is the judge, and you're accountable to him. He will hold us accountable for what we do with what he's given us. So therefore, we must walk in wisdom before him. So if you're young, heed the words from Solomon. Live in the fear of the Lord, letting the reality of accountability to God guide you. We don't like that word accountability. It's like doom and gloom, okay? But that doesn't demand that from our lives. What does accountability demand? It demands that we think biblically about the decisions we're making in our lives and the actions we're taking. The ways of your heart And the sight of your eyes, he mentions in verse 9, must be guided by God's word. Because if so, then you will have confidence that you can stand unashamed before the Lord in the day of judgment. Because I have followed God and trusted him. Because life is unsure, we see in verse 10, we're tempted to live in what he deems vexation. Wow, that's a big word, okay? What does he mean? Well, we're tempted to let sorrow and grief crash into our lives. There's a picture here of anxiety that comes into our hearts. We are troubled by the pain and the evil that we feel in our physical bodies. But because of the vaporous nature of our lives, let us put these things away and live in the joy of the Lord. Okay, let me say it this way. A few weeks ago, we said that Solomon admonishes us to use our vapor wisely. Now, we are similarly admonished to live our vapor joyously. Okay? Make sure you say joyously and not joylessly, okay? So, young person, more mature person, live life in the joy of the presence of the Lord. He has ordained it to be so. He wants you to enjoy your life. Our God is a good and loving God who gives to his children good and wonderful gifts. And if you walk with him, you can know true, unrivaled joy. That is not the bill of goods that Satan will sell you. Satan will sell you the bill of goods, as he did in the Garden of Eden, and say, God's holding out on you, and if you would just cut loose and listen to me and your flesh, then life will be good. But Solomon, through inspiration of God, reminds us that the only way to truly enjoy life is to live it the way God says. And if you walk with him, you can know true unrivaled joy. But in order to do so, what does he say here at the end of verse 10? Put away pain. Or another way to translate pain here is evil. If you live in sin, you cannot enjoy God's joy. For walking in the darkness of sin will never bring the joy of the Lord. He says again at the end of verse 10, youth and the dawn of life are, and there's the word, vanity, hevel, right? They're fleeting. They're leaving us quicker than we know. So know the Lord, seek the Lord, and enjoy the Lord. This world is an unsure place, and the stages, the seasons of life that we live in bring their own challenges. The troubles of a fallen world attack us. Satan seeks to entangle us in the web of sin and lies, but our God is unchanging. He is omnipotent. He is sovereign. So therefore, let us go forth in diligent joy, resting in him and enjoying this brief life that we have in him. Meaningful life is found in engaging in and enjoying the temporal work and life God has given us here. And those who follow the Lord enjoy the fruits of such a relationship. God gives joy to us even in an uncertain, unstable world. God calls on we who belong to him to be diligent workers, even in the face of instability. We aren't in control, but we know the one who is. So therefore, we rely on his wisdom and act in his strength. God rewards faithfulness. You understand this? That God doesn't call you to be successful. God doesn't call you to a certain level of, if you do this and you do this, here's what I'm calling, you know, this is what you have to get. No, what does God call us to? He calls us to be faithful. He takes care of the rest, right? And some are blessed, right? In certain ways, more ways than others. And that's okay, that's up to God, right? We're not called to be successful, we're called to be faithful. We're called to, in fact, God defines success to Joshua in the book of Joshua as they prepared to go into Canaan. He says, meditate on the law, right? Meditate, I'm going to slaughter this verse because I can't make it come out of my head tonight, but meditate in the law of God and then you will have success. Then I will make your way prosperous. He calls us to be faithful. And if we will be faithful and obedient, we can entrust the results to him and rejoice in what he has given us. And if this is your approach to life in God through Jesus, you can live joyfully. This world is broken. We're finite. We have a lot of questions. But God has still given us good things. Your life will be touched by trials and tribulations. If it hasn't been already, it will be. You will experience even daily hindrances and hardships, but God is still on the throne. God is still in control, and therefore we can and we must rejoice. The life of joy is a gift from God, lived in the power of God. So let us follow what Solomon says and live in the reality of that joy that we find in our God today. Father, thanks for bringing us back here tonight to hear the word of God. Thank you for these practical admonitions from Solomon, who tried everything life had to offer and found out, as is inevitable, that the only way to live life is to live it to your honor and your glory and through a relationship with you. And we ask that you would help us tonight to be challenged by these things, to see the reality of these verses and these truths, that there is so much outside of our control, but that does not put a damper on the life we can enjoy in you. Help us to be diligent, to go about the work you have given us, to faithfully carry those things out. And in so doing, help us to be joyful in the life you have given us as we rest in you. Help us to understand that that's where true meaning comes from. It comes from you and you alone. And help us to then commit ourselves to using our vapors wisely and living them joyfully for the kingdom of God. Help us as we go out this week to take the word of God and live its truths in our lives. In your name we pray. Amen.